Side 2, The Legend of Luke, by Brian Jakes. Continuing on page 46. Next morning, Queen Garraway took the travelers beyond her dam. There had once been a broad waterfall farther down the stream, but the damming had cut it down to half its original size, allowing the otters to build a steep mudslide. Squeaking kits, covered from ears to tails in wet brown clay, shot down it like stones from a sling, splashing into the pool below and emerging clean of mud. The friends laughed uproariously at their antics. Trim pointed out one, zooming down backward.
"Hee hee hee, look at that little scamp. Bet he'd catch it off his mother if she saw him doing that."
With a resounding splash, the little one hit the water, vanished, and came up again, washed recognizable. Trimp hid a smile as Denny roared gruffly at the culprit.
"You're get out in there, Maester Chug. You bain't no hotter. You ma boast to be a squiggle, ye lickle rip."
Chugger wrinkled his nose at the mole.
"I nor a swiggle no more. Chugga a nodder now."
Crafty Gaunt waved to the squirrel babe.
"Righto then, otter matey. You stay there. We're going now."
Chugger scrambled up the bank and clung to Trimp.
"Nor a nodder no more. Chugger go with you to the northern seashores. Hurry up, Martin. We go now."
Below the falls, the pool narrowed again into the stream. Queen Garraway lifted the fringe of bushes growing on its bank, showing them their transport.
"Here 'tis, mates. A stout little raft. Come on, Gonfo. Lend a paw to pull it out here."
It had a collapsible mast and a sail, which would double as a tent, plus four long ash poles, paddle-shaped at one end. They heaved it into the water and leaped aboard. Martin shook the Otter Queen's paw heartily.
"Thank you for everything, Majesty. May your tribe live in peace and plenty here always."
The brawny otter grinned cheerfully at them.
"Thank ye, and may your journey be a safe un. Go now. Find what ye seek, and don't let old Gonfo get his nose into the grub supplies too often."
6. By mid-morning, the stream had widened out considerably. Small white clouds decorated the sunny skies, and a gentle breeze convinced the friends they should erect the mast pole and spread sail. Denny was never fond of water, and had to be dug out of the jumble of sail canvas where he had hidden himself. Gaunt, however, took on a decidedly nautical mood, calling out orders.
"Ahoy, mateys! Rig up that mast pole amidships, will ye? Set yon sail and unfurl her smart-like to catch the breeze."
Martin and Trimp chuckled as Denny threw a derisory salute.
"Aye, aye, Cap'n Gaunt, sir. Do we got any more hoarders for us common water beasties?"
Hiding a grin, Gaunt called back haughtily.
"I say, Martin, tie a rock to that fat old mole's tail and chuck him in the river, will you? He's slowing us up."
Bushy-edged banks slipped by, casting lacy patterns of sun shadow on the translucent waters. Trimp munched on a damson scone and sipped raspberry cordial.
"Ah, this is the life, pals.
Ouch!"
A muddy stick came spinning out of the north bank bushes, striking her on the cheek, followed by a mocking imitation of the hog maid's voice.
"This is the life, pals! Hee hee!"
Martin grabbed a pole and punted the raft toward the south bank. Gaunt's sharp eyes picked out the culprit.
"There he is, see? Running along behind the bushes!"
They followed the direction of Gaunt's outstretched paw. A young, gray-brown rat was barely visible amid the foliage. Then it emerged onto the bank, pointing back at the mouse thief and mimicking his voice in a nasty manner.
"Running along behind the bushes, hee hee!"
Martin's grip relaxed on his sword hilt.
"Ignore the little villain. He's only trying to annoy us."
The rat flung another stick, but the raft was now too far away from the north bank to be hit. He stuck out his tongue at Martin.
"Ignore the little villain, hee hee hee!"
Chugger looked stern and shook a tiny paw at the rat.
Go away, naughty mouse, or I'd biff ya.
Martin took hold of the little squirrel, who was about to jump from the raft, and held him wriggling in the air. Now, I told you, ignore the naughty mouse. But something unlikable in the creature's swaggering attitude caught Gomp's attention. He stood up.
I thought that was a mouse at first, but he's a sneaky young water rat. Look at that thick tail, mates.
The rat stuck his claws in both ears and waggled them impudently at the mouse thief, dancing up and down provokingly.
Oh, look at his tail, mates. Look at his tail. Hee hee.
Gaunt whipped out his sling, fitted a small pebble to it, and lobbed it expertly off. The stone, which Gaunt had not cast with any great force, caught the rat a stinging blow on the tail. It leaped up and down, clinging to its tail and howling tearfully.
Ow, 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 ow! The mouse nearly slayed me! Ow, 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 ow!
Gaunt returned his impression of the whining vermin.
Ow, ow, ow! Naughty mouse nearly slayed me. Ow, ow!
The rat stopped wailing, his face a picture of fury.
You shut your face! Think you're funny, don't you?
Trent came to stand beside Gaunt.
What's the matter, rat? Don't you like a taste of your own medicine? Be off with you. Go and boil your ugly head.
The rat kept running along the bank to keep up with the raft, throwing twigs, mud, and anything it could lay paws upon. But they fell far short of the travelers. He was livid with rage, shrieking out at them.
Oh, you done it now. Wait and see. Nearly slayed Riddig, son of mighty Gurfang, boss of all the stream rats.
Gaunt fitted another stone to his sling, a proper-sized rock this time.
Ah, stop whining and run off home to your daddy. Quick now, or I'll show you what a real sling stone can do. I'll give you to the count of three, rat. One, two.
Riddig stopped running and ducked off hastily into the bushes, still calling out threats to his enemies.
Don't go to sleep tonight. Better not turn your back. You slaughter all dead beasts. Wait and see.
Martin sighed, shaking his head at Gaunt.
That's all we need. More trouble. First the flitch eye, now stream rats.
Didn't I tell you to ignore him? Gaunt shrugged apologetically.
Nasty little vermin. Couldn't help myself, mate.
Trimp was about to agree when Dinny interrupted.
Brr, nor could I, Martin, though I'd have gotten the vermin a good crack first time with my slinger.
Chugger thrust out his little jaw truculently.
And I would have swimmed over and bited his tail off, too.
Martin tickled Chugger behind the ear fondly.
I wager that would have made him jump, eh, Chug?
Personally, I felt a desire to kick that young horror's tail up and down the bank a bit just to teach him a lesson in manners. But keep your eyes peeled, mates. I have a feeling we haven't heard the last of this little incident.
The remainder of a pleasant day was spoiled for Trimp. She watched every rustle of bush or reed along the banks, expecting at any moment to see a mob of rats come springing out at them. However, the situation did not seem to bother her companions a bit. Chugger curled up amid the food packs and snored like a holdful of otters, while Martin, Denny, and Gonf chatted amiably, lying back and trailing their paws in the water. Had Trimp observed them more closely, she would have noticed that the three Redwallers were alert as hunting hawks, keeping their weapons close by at all times. Evening fell, and still there was no sign of rats. Martin took precautions by nosing the raft onto a rock, which jutted up in center stream, and making a rope fast to it. Denny fished about until he located a broad, flat stone close to the rock. Hauling it aboard, the clever mole built a small fire on it. Martin chopped vegetables with his sword, while Trimp dug out dried water shrimp and herbs from a haversack. Gaunt filled their small cauldron with fresh stream water, and Chugger sat warming his paws by the fire. Martin tossed the vegetables into the pot and wiped his sword clean. A fire at night isn't the best idea in these parts, Den. The mole watched his soup carefully as he stirred it.
Mayap tain't, zur, but if an any beast be a-goin' to attack us'ns, they'd do it foyer or not. Breezes ony water be a bit chill. Not loike a good drop of soup, nice and hot, to keep ye warm and appy.
Gonf cut a loaf of rye bread into chunks.
Can't argue with mole logic, mate. Old Den's right.
Denny's soup was good, and they sat around the cauldron, each with a wooden spoon and a chunk of bread, sharing the meal in true traveler fashion. Martin set up two oar poles and brought the sail forward, draping it over them as a precaution against rain during the night. Tramp found a narrow flagon of elderberry wine, and they passed it round, each taking a few sips. The hog maid smiled.
There, that should keep the chills away.
What now, mates?
Gaunt smiled back at her.
Now you give us a song, missy.
No, no. My voice would carry over water.
Let Denny sing.
A look passed between Martin and Gaunt, and they both sighed.
Never heard a mole sing before, have you, Tramp?
No, I can't say I have. Why?
Oh, nothing, mate. You sure you want to hear mole song?
Of course I do. That's if Denny would be kind enough to oblige us with one of his songs.
The mole's homely face creased deeply with pleasure.
How could I refuse a pretty maid like ye, miss?
Then he placed a paw over one ear in traditional mole singer's manner and launched into a mole ballad.
Oh, doodlum roodlum wordlum day, all on a bright summer mornin'. Bold Dougal Mole were girtly brave, as I were told by my mother. For maidens boy the score he'd save, like chestnuts, one after another. Each morn he rode out from his abode, a-mounted on a milky white toad, searching a dangerous forest road, a-looking furry maidens. Oh, doodlum, roodlum, wordlum day, all on a bright summer morning. He spied a girt fat mole wife there, and doffed his hat to her proudly, which frightened the mole wife out in her wits. She started to wail right loudly. He shoved her up on the back of his toad, and tried to ride off down a road. But two fat moles was an heavy load, and he toad were crushed like a beetle. Oh, doodlum, roodlum, wordlum day, all on a bright summer mornin'. Then oop come a good and stoutly mole, he cried. Whoa there, bless my life, there be two villains trying to steal my dear old fatty girt wife. So pulling out a naughty ash club, both toad and doogle he did drub. He gave him black and blue lumps to rub, and his wife gave him cabbage for supper.
Tramp and Little Chugger were laughing so hard that they had trouble trying to join in on the chorus. Gonf shook his head at them sadly.
Don't encourage him, mates. I've heard that song. There's still another 47 verses to go yet.
Martin leaped on Denny suddenly, stifling the mole's mouth with both paws. Tramp sniffed at the warrior severely.
Don't be so bad-mannered, sir. Let poor Denny finish his song. Chugger and I were enjoying it.
Martin shot her a warning glance, his voice an urgent whisper.
Don't make another sound, Tramp. Gonf, throw some water on that fire, and let's get in the stream, quick.
They obeyed Martin without question. Gonf flung water on the flames, which sizzled and hissed in clouds of white steam. Tramp found herself breathless in the cold stream, pulled there by Denny. Keeping their heads low, the travelers clung to the raft. A hail of arrows hit the sailcloth shelter, some zipping through, others bouncing off to stick in the deck timbers. These were followed by a volley of sling stones and a couple of throwing spears, both of which buried their points in the food haversacks. Then there was silence. Chugger clung to Martin's neck, shivering.
I cold and wet. Not nice in a water.
Another lot of arrows hit the raft. Martin stroked the little squirrel's head, whispering softly,
Shh, now, Chug. Right, let's swim over to the far bank. Try not to make any splashes. Go easy.
As they swam off, a harsh voice called from the opposite bank.
Give him some more, just to make sure. Then we'll board the raft and have fun with any still breathing.
The travelers made it safely to the far bank. Trimp found some dry grass and rolled Chugger in it. Then she joined her friends, watching in the thick bushes by the stream's edge. Swaying under the impact, the raft took several more salvos of missiles. Gonf nudged Denny.
Do you reckon we're slain by now, Den?
Them ratters give any raft enough to finish off e Troy but badger folk, I be thinking.
Martin began gathering pawfuls of pebbles from the shallows.
Let's see how they like a spot of sniping. Wait for my word.
Launching crude log boats, the rats made it clumsily across to the raft. There were so many of them that the raft began to tilt crazily. Boss Gerfang, their leader, caught hold of his son Riddig, who was trying to undo one of the haversacks, and snarled at the young rat.
Well, where are they, these creatures that tried to slay her? I don't see them anywheres.
Riddig cowered under his father's angry glare.
I don't know where they went, but there was five of them. Two old mice, a fat mole, a young aug, and a little squirrel. They all battered me with sling stones for no reason at all. I was just lying on the bank taking a nap.
Gerfang tweaked his son's ear sharply.
And you just lay there and let him do it, you, boss's son? Stinking little coward, you make me sick.
Riddig squealed as Gerfang stamped on his tail, protesting,
I never just lay there. I got the aug with a stick and the two mice with big round stones. They can't have got far.
A dull thud sounded in the night, and one of the rats toppled into the water. Gerfang turned on the rest.
Be still and leave them haversacks alone, or you'll have us all in a stream. Stop rocking the raft, will you?
Thonk.
Flat. Thwack. Crack. Thunk.
Berman let out agonized yells. Two fell in the stream, and the raft rocked wildly as big round river pebbles whizzed out of the darkness, causing injury and chaos. Gerfang leaped with the others into the water. Seizing their logboat sides, they swam madly back to their own bank, peppered relentlessly with stones. No sooner was Gerfang on dry land than the slinging ceased. He grabbed Riddig roughly by the scruff and hauled him ashore, then snapped a willow switch from a young sapling.
Two old mice, a fat mole, a young aug, and a little squirrel, eh? You rotten, barefaced liar!
Riddig danced in an agonized circle, his father holding him tight by the neck scruff and wailing away mercilessly with the willow switch.
Eee! Ooh! Ooh! I was telling the truth, sir! Honest I was! Ah! Yeek! Yeek! Ow! 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 Ow!
Truth! You wouldn't know truth if it fell on your head out of a tree, you mealy-mouthed, fork-tongued worm!
Gerfang laid on heavily with a switch, punctuating each word to drive home his message.
There was more'n five beasts stoning us there, you 40-faced toad. Must have been at least a dozen. All trained warriors, by the way, they could aim and hit so good. Own up now. There was 12 of 'em. Mostly otters from upstream, wasn't there, you wretch? Tell the truth or I'll flay yer.
Gaunt twirled his sling idly, winking at Trimp as they crouched in the bushes on the far bank.
Does your heart good listening to justice being done, missy?
The hedgehog maid listened with satisfaction as she heard Riddig's wails echoing into the night.
Wah-har! There was 12 otters beside the others. Don't hit me no more, boss, please! 12 otters, you was right! Wah-ha-ha!
Following this revelation, Gerfang could be heard calling to the rest of his tribe as they deserted him.
Where are you lot off to? Get back here!
Derisive shouts followed his command.
Yeah, we ain't scrapping with no 12 otters. Go and fight your brat's battles yourself. Your Riddig started it.
Donf grinned, stowing his sling about his waist.
You know what they say? Truth never hurt any beast.
Martin unbuckled his sword and borrowed Gaunt's dagger.
So they say, mate, but you try telling that to Riddig.
I wager he's sorry he ever threw that stick at Trimp. Wait here, I'll swim out to our raft and cut it loose. Next morning, dry and well breakfasted, the friends sailed onward, staying close to the far bank. Summer warmth raised their spirits, with Gonf confiding aloud to Martin and Trimp. I reckon it wasn't Riddick caused all that fuss, you know. Trimp looked up from the dough she was kneading for lunch.
Was it not? Who do you think was responsible then?
Denny's singing, of course. It drove the rats wild, and they attacked us just to stop the horrible noise, missy.
Brr, terrible cruel, Zer Gonfin. My old grandmum always said I had a voice like a lark at first light.
Ha ha! That's 'cause your old grandmum was deaf as a post, Den.
Denny continued chopping candied fruit, not raising his eyes.
Aye, and thy old granddad allus said you were a most girtly, handsome creature. Nice old beast he were. I used to take him for walks lest he bump into trees. Blind he were, poor creature.
High noon found them pulled into a shady inlet out of the hot midday sun. Trimp wanted to bake a candied fruit turnover, but she had no oven. With mole ingenuity, Denny solved the problem. He cemented flat pieces of shale together with stiff brown clay and water, making a neat little box, which, with the turnover inside, was placed on the fire. Martin and Gonf repaired the torn sail, rent by rat weapons. No beast paid much attention to little Chugger. Trimp warned him to stay close to camp, and he did for a while. But while Trimp was busy with her cooking, and Denny was digging for fresh roots and vegetables, Chugger wandered off. Trimp called to her friends,
"Come on, lunch is ready. Bring your appetite with you."
Hastily washing their paws in the stream, they strolled into camp, sniffing the air appreciatively.
"Boy, Oaky, something smells nice, Marm."
Candied fruit turnover, just the thing. Aye, 'tis ages since I tasted fruit turnover.
The hedgehog maid had discovered a big flagon of new cider at the bottom of Martin's pack. She poured out beakers for all and laid out chunks of hot turnover on a piece of birch bark she had found before saying, "Where's that rascal Chugger got to?" Denny shrugged as he helped himself to lunch.
"Oh, him about your someplace, I expect. You seed him?"
Martin took a gulp of the crisp-tasting apple cider.
"Me? No, I thought he was with you, Den. Me and Gonf were busy fixing up the raft. Did you notice Chug around Gonf?"
The mouse thief shook his head.
"No, sorry, I ain't seen him."
Seating himself, he began blowing on his turnover to cool it.
"Ha! Old Chug'll soon come running when he smells your cooking, Miss Trimp, you'll see."
But Chugger didn't come. They sat and ate lunch, glancing about and giving an occasional shout at the little squirrel's name. Still nothing. Trimp was worried.
"Martin, will you go and take a good look around? I'm sure Chugger can't have gone far."
The warrior put aside his food.
"Let's all take a look."
Spreading out in different directions, they began combing the area. Martin and Gonf went east and west along the bank, while Denny searched in and around the camp area, in case Chugger was having a game with them. Trimp ventured alone into the woodland, knowing that Martin and Gonf would circle inward and meet up with her when they had searched the bank both ways. Tree shelter became thick and gloomy, blocking out most of the sunlight and leaving the depths cloaked in a murky green twilight. The hedgehog maid went cautiously, calling out in a subdued voice,
"Chugger, are you there, mate? Come out, my little Chug."
Her voice fell dead upon her ears, with no echo. She felt very small amid the tall columns of oak, elm, and beech. Then her sharp ears began to pick up the odd noise, and she smiled to herself. That would be Chugger, playing one of his little tricks, stalking her mischievously. She decided to hide and turn the tables on him. Swiftly, Trimp ran behind a broad, bump-gnarled black poplar and was knocked flat by the creature that had been following her.
She squeaked in fright at the sight of it.
7. The giant goshawk took a pace backward, allowing Trimp to rise unsteadily. From its black hooked talons and bright yellow legs up the mighty body, feathered in brown-tipped white plumage to the mottled head cap, it was the most impressive bird Trimp had ever seen. Twin gleaming gold eyes with savage black pupils stared down at her over a lethally curved beak. The goshawk's voice was rasping, harsh.
"What doest thou in my domain, hedge pig?"
Trimp had never been called a hedge pig. Bravely, she decided to retaliate, and swallowing hard, she adopted a stern tone.
"Not that it's any of your business, bird, but I'm searching for my friend, a baby squirrel named Chugger."
The goshawk twitched his head to one side. He had never been addressed as bird before.
"Prithee, have a care, spine dame. I am called Krar, the wood watcher. None hath called me bird and lived."
Trent became bolder. She stared levelly at the goshawk.
"Aye, and I'm called Trimp the Rover by those with any manners. None have called me hedge pig and lived, or that goes for spine dame also."
It was Trimp's turn to take a backward step. She thought Krar was about to eat her, but a moment later she realized that he was actually smiling at her, an unusual occurrence in a hawk.
"Thou art a bold beast, Trimp Rover. Thine enemies must be few, methinks, or dead. Say again the name of this squirrel mite thou seekest."
"Chugger. But he'll answer to Chug. He's only a babe."
The forest green was blotted out as Krar spread his colossal wings. He touched Trimp's head with a wingtip.
"Do you tarry here, Trimp Rover, while I make inquiries?"
Trimp was knocked flat by the back rush of air as Krar flapped his wings and rose among the tree trunks. Leaves drifted down through a golden shaft of sunlight as he shot like an arrow through the woodland canopy. Gonf came trotting through the woodland, catching sight of his friend as he hurried in from the opposite direction.
"Ahoy, Martin! No sign of the little feller?"
"None, mate. Have you seen Trimp?"
"Hi, you two. I'm over here."
Both ran over to where Trimp was sitting with her back against the poplar, picking leaves from her head spikes. Gonf stood, paws akimbo, shaking his head at her.
"Well, missy, this is a nice how do you do? Us two running ourselves ragged along the stream banks and through the woods, and you sitting here cooling your paws. Very nice."
Trimp stood up, brushing herself off.
"Actually, I'm waiting for word of Chugger at any moment. Now, I don't want either of you to be afraid."
Martin looked about and spread his paws wide.
"Afraid of what, Trimp?"
She pointed upward.
"That."
Entering the woodland through the hole he had made in the treetops, Krar Woodwatcher zoomed in like a thunderbolt. All three travelers were knocked flat by the wind from his wings as he landed. Trimp patted one of Krar's talons.
"Now you'll have to stop doing that, Krar. It'll injure some poor beast one day. These are my good friends, Martin the Warrior and Gonf, Prince of Mouse Thieves. Meet Krar Woodwatcher, mates. These woodlands belong to him."
Martin and Gonf gulped and bowed low at the same time. Krar closed both eyes and clacked his beak politely, as goshawks do when greeting friends. He turned to Trimp.
"Thy friend the squirrel mite is taken captive in the talons of laggardly carrion. Crows, I fear. Alas, 'tis sad news."
Trimp was about to speak when Gonf silenced her with a wink. The artful mouse thief addressed himself to the goshawk, cleverly using the bird's own antiquated mode of speech.
"Lack-a-day, sirrah! And thou callest thyself ruler of this fiefdom? Were I in thy place, I'd say fie upon myself, methinks, allowing carrion to hold innocent babes in durance. 'Tis not the worthy act of a just lord."
Much to Martin and Trimp's surprise, the huge goshawk shifted from one leg to the other, his head hanging slightly.
Thou speakest truly, O mouse thief. 'Tis my domain, and 'twas fitting I stand chided for lack of vigilance.
Gonf shook his head doubtfully.
I fain would give thee a chance to redeem thyself, Lord.
Crouching low, the huge bird spread his wings wide upon the ground, his face a picture of abject misery, his very feathers seeming to droop.
Then truly woe betide me, though I crave a boon from thee, Prince of Mouse Thieves. Give me leave to effect rescue of thy vassal, I beg ye. Grant me this favor, and I will be in thy debt from this day henceforth.
A wave of pity swept over Trimp as she watched Krar, prostrate at Gonf's footpaws. She could not keep from crying out,
Oh, say you will, Gonf! Let him do it!
The mouse thief folded his paws stubbornly. Turning his back on the goshawk, he winked at Martin and Trimp as he spoke.
Silence, maid! Cease thy prattling! For how doth the Prince of Mouse Thieves know this creature will cleave true unto his word?
Martin drew his sword. Touching Krar's bowed head with it, he kissed the blade and announced dramatically,
I, Martin of Redwall, do give my pledge and bond that Krar Woodwatcher, lord of this place, will honor thy trust, O Prince. For is he not a warrior born like myself, and bound in word and deed to protect lesser creatures?
Gonf paced up and down, as if digesting this statement. Then he placed his footpaw under Krar's beak.
Say, where is this place yon foul crows abide?
A note of hope crept into the goshawk's voice.
Some pines in a clearing, right close to here, O Prince. Thou and thy friends mayest follow me and watch while I free thy servant. But 'tis better it be done soon, for tarrying is unwise, methinks.
He watched avidly as Gonf nodded.
Mayhap 'tis so. Go then, but hearken. Thou hast this warrior to thank for his surety.
A transformation came over the goshawk. He dipped his lethal beak and kissed Gonf's footpaw.
My thanks to thee, O Prince.
Standing tall, Krar spread his immense wings, saluting Martin, who was dwarfed in his shadow.
And my thanks to thee, sire. Kara hara Krar!
The goshawk's blood-chilling war cry rang out as he whooshed into the air, bowling the three friends over. Trimp sprang up, pulling leaves from her spines.
I wish he wouldn't do that. Gonf, how did you know he'd act like that?
The mouse thief flicked a paw at Martin.
Oh, it was easy. I know how warriors think. I've lived with one most of my life, haven't I, matey?
Martin tweaked his friend's tail.
Cut the chatter or we'll lose sight of Krar.
Running as fast as they could, the friends kept Krar in sight as he winged slowly along just beneath the treetops, taking care not to lose them. After a while, they saw a broad green hillock thrusting itself above the woodland. At its top was a pine grove. Krar swooped down, landing alongside Gonf.
Yonder lies the Carrion stronghold, O Prince. I pray thee, make no move. We have been seen.
As he spoke, a crowd of gray-black crows of the hooded variety came fluttering out of the pines like ragged, dark pieces of cloth blown on the wind, coming to rest on the level sward below the hill. Their bold, harsh chatter filled the air as they swaggered forward to meet the interlopers, wings folded, beaks thrust forth aggressively. In a less fraught situation, the sight of their curious rolling gait might have been comical, but these were savage birds, who brooked no trespassers on their land.
Krar whispered, "Bide here, friends. Warrior, keep thy blade ready. Now I will go hence and parley, for I know the Carrion tongue."
He strode out, erect and disdainful, and a big crow, far heavier than the rest, waddled forward to meet him. At a point between the crows and the travelers, both birds halted. Eye to eye they stood, beaks almost touching. The crow leader hit the soil several times with his beak, casually, as if showing his contempt by digging for worms. He made harsh cawing noises.
Craw, racker, chacker, crock, crock.
The goshawk rapped sharply back at him.
Rack, racker.
The crow gestured carelessly with one wing.
Knack, rack.
Evidently, it was not the answer Crar desired. The goshawk made his move without a moment's hesitation. Charging forward, he slammed the crow to the ground with a ferocious headbutt and began hammering him ruthlessly with beak and talons. Cawing and hopping about excitedly, the crow gang called out encouragement to their leader. But he did not possess the warrior's heart or ferocity of the goshawk. It was over in a trice. A few long, gray-black feathers flew in the air, and the crow leader lay defeated. With sharp pecks and talon scratches, Crar forced the crow to stand. The brave goshawk rapped out a command at his beaten foe.
Shabarag!
Humiliated, the crow turned to face his gang, spreading his wings limply and dropping them so they trailed upon the grass. Trimp nudged Martin.
I know Crar has won, but what's he doing?
The warrior had understood it all. He knew. Those feathers that you see are the crow's pin feathers. Crar ripped them out. That crow will never be able to fly again. Crar forced him to show his wings to the others as a warning.
Hush now, Trimp. I want to see what happens next.
The goshawk took to the air. Sailing over the heads of the crows, he winged upward, landing in the biggest nest atop the highest tree. A female crow shot out of it with a terrified squawk. Crar dipped his beak into the nest and came up with an egg in it. He put the egg back. Spreading his wings, he flapped them, screeching harshly at the crows. Then, with a powerful thrust, he ripped a chunk from the nest with his talons and cast it down to earth. Pandemonium broke out down below. The crows dashed into the pine grove, cawing and leaping about in distress. Martin spoke as he watched them, having interpreted the goshawk's move. He's threatening to rip all the nests to shreds, starting with the crow leaders, unless they bring out Chugger. Watch.
Trimp! Gonf! It's me, Chug! Here I are!
Dashing out of the pine grove, with the crows behind shooing him on, Chugger hurtled forward, tripping and rolling down the hill, giggling as he went.
Hee hee hee! Yah yah, old feathery bums!
Trimp swept him up into her paws, kissing the little fellow and lecturing him at the same time.
Such language, Master Chug! Thank the seasons you're safe! Why did you go wandering off like that, eh? Oh, my little Chug, you had us worried to death!
Chugger threw his tiny paws wide, grinning broadly.
See? It me, Chug. I nor heard it. Big birds frightened of me. I smack at them with big sticks. Oh, yes.
Gonf hugged Chugger fondly, then turned stern.
You little fibber. Smacking crows with big sticks, indeed. But let me tell you, bucko, remember what Gurfang did to young Riddig, eh? Well, any more fibs and running off when you're told to stay near camp, and you'll get the same off me.
Chugger hid his face in Trimp's tunic and sulked. Martin threw a paw about Gonf's shoulders.
Big old softy, I'll wager you wouldn't have the heart to lay a paw on Chugger, would you, oh prince?
The mouse thief struck a regal pose, looking down his nose.
Oh, I don't know. You'd be surprised what us royal types can do when we're in the mood. I usually have any mouse who leans upon me beheaded, so remove your paw, common fellow, afore you incur me wrath.
Martin looked at Trimp in mock horror.
Such an air of command these royal ones have about them.
The hedgehog kicked Gonf lightly in the tail.
Yes, oh prince. It's your turn to cook the supper when we get back to camp.
Crar landed in their midst, managing not to knock any beast over with his giant wings. He gestured with his beak.
Best we be gone from this place. Methinks there be but one of me, and too many of yon carrion. Let us away now.
8. As there was still plenty of daylight left, the travelers opted to sail farther rather than lie about in camp. Crar Woodwatcher saw them off on the stream bank.
Fare thee well, O Prince of Mouse Thieves. Fortune go with thee. Thou wilt not see me, but I will guard the air and watch o'er thee till thou art gone from my domain.
Be you subject to thy prince's commands, and behave thyself, Squire Chug, or I will give thee back to yon carrion. Fortune attend thee, Dame Trimp, my friend. Thou too, good Dinny, and thee, Sir Martin. I'll not lightly forget that ye forswore thine honor for me. Go now, good beasts.
Chugger began weeping as they sailed off downstream.
Waha! Chug not want Crar to be gone.
Martin let the little fellow work one of the paddles. Crar isn't gone, Chug. He's watching over us, even though we can't see him. Get him a wave. Go on. Chugger waved a chubby paw and felt somewhat better. As the warrior held the paddle with the squirrel babe, he explained as best he could.
Sometimes friends do go from us. It will happen more and more as you grow up, Chug. But if you really love your friends, they're never gone. Somewhere they're watching over you, and they're always there inside your heart.
Toward evening, they saw a fire glow in the distance. With complete silence and great caution, the friends approached it, hoping that if it were any beast hostile, they might slip by unnoticed. But as a voice, raised in song, echoed on the dusky air, Gaunt relaxed, chuckling.
I'd know that barrel-bellied baritone anywhere, mates. Now there's a fine voice for you, but don't tell him I said it. Har! Listen to him, will you?
It was a fine voice, more bass than baritone. Deep and rich, it thrummed out over the babbling stream noises.
Ho, rum-tum-toe, fa-la-diddle-do, me boots are full of water, and the bread won't rise, so I'm scoffin' apple pies and swiggin' good dark porter. Ho, bless my fur, and you sit over there. There's honey cake and salad, and you got no choice but to listen to me voice as I sing you this ballad.
A look of pure mischief spread across Gon's face. Cupping both paws around his mouth, he sang out in a perfect imitation of the singer's deep voice.
Oh, you sit there, and I'll sit here, and I won't hear your ballad, but I'll scoff your pie, and I'll look ye in the eye, with my ears stuffed full of salad.
From around a bend in the bank, a small, neat logboat came shooting out, propelled by a fat shrew with an ash stave. Trent knew that shrews were usually aggressive and short-tempered, but this one was different. He performed a joyful jig at the prospect of company. It came as no surprise that the shrew and Gonf knew each other. As the former leaped aboard the raft, they pounded backs and shook paws.
Log a log, Firmo, you pot-bellied son of a water-walloper! As soon as I clapped ears on that warblin', I knew 'twas the best ballad singer this side of Mossflower. Ha-har, Gonf, mouse thief, ye light-pawed rogue! If I hadn't have knowed that was you singin' back at me, I'd have thought 'twas meself. Pull over to the camp and bring your pals with ye. Supper's on the go. Ahoy, Martin! Is it really yourself, warrior? Good to see you, matey.
Dinny tapped the shrew chieftain with a digging claw.
Don't he know I, zur? For I'd know he from a buddy fly.
Log-a-log Firmo stood back, rubbing his eyes.
Well, sink me a log. Is that the slim young mole I once knew as Dinny? What happened, mate? Is there another beast inside that skin with ye?
Dinny chuckled, patting his ample form.
Nay, Zerlog, I just growed more bootiful and girtly strong since you bain't been round to rob my vittles.
Firmo turned to Trimp.
And what is a gentle hog maid like you doing with such rogues?
Trimp smiled. Keeping them in order.
I'd best watch my manners then, I'm thinking,
laughed Firmo. The guerrilla union of shrews in Mossflower, Guasim, for short, had always been headed by one traditionally named Logalog. They ranged all the waterways in their logboats, a great tribe of them, Trimp was almost half a head taller than most of them. Small, spike-furred, long-snouted shrews with brightly colored headbands and rapiers tucked in their belts watched as the newcomers made their way to the fire. Logalog introduced them as friends, reassuring his band. Guwassum shrews are excellent cooks, as the hedgehog maid soon discovered. Their apple and blackberry crumble was pure delight to taste. Two Guwassum cooks stood over Trimp, watching anxiously as she sampled some, inquiring gruffly,
"Good crumble, that? Made it ourselves, you know. Aye, to our own recipe. Do you like it, Marm?"
Trimp's smile would have charmed the birds out of the trees.
"It's perfect, thank you. I've never tasted a crumble in my life that could compare with it. Beautiful."
Unused to such compliments, the shrew cooks kicked their foot paws bashfully and began serving more food, calling to one another in bass growls to hide their embarrassment.
"Oi, Rugger, pour some pear cordial, will ye? Aye, and give her some shrew cheese and watercress. Look after poor little Chugger, will ye, Bindle? Pour some honey o'er the babe's hazelnut puddin'. Some stream-side salad and you baked cornbread for ye, Marm."
Logalog Firmo smiled at the antics of his younger shrews, trying to impress the travelers with her hospitality, particularly Trimp, for it is a fact that the Guwassum had always been partial to a pretty face. Firmo passed Martin and Gonf a tankard of shrew porter apiece, saying,
"Ha-har! Young Trimp's gotten her paws well under the table there. They'll feed her till she bursts."
Some of the little shrews had never seen a mole before, and they crowded around Denny, haranguing him as he ate.
"Does all moles have softy nice fur like you, Mr. Diggy?"
"Oh, yes, my dearies. Us'uns keeps it soft by eatin' oop all us vittles like good beasts."
"You must be the goodest mole of all, Mr. Diggy, 'cause you be eatin' a horful big lot of vittles."
Thank ye, young'un. I expect I am."
"You got very big, big claws, Mr. Diggy. What they for?"
A kindly shrew mom rounded the little ones up.
"Don't you be asking Mr. Denny foolish questions now. Leave him in peace to eat his supper. Bedboat's for you. 'Tis late."
Martin was relating the object of their journey to Firmo when the shrew mom stole up and whispered in the shrew chieftain's ear. He excused himself, explaining,
"We'll talk later, friend. I've got to sing the little uns off to sleep. Won't be long."
Moored to the bank was a logboat, padded thickly with warm cushions and blankets. The shrew babes lay in it, rocked by the motion of the water, as their log-a-log sang them to sleep in his melodious deep voice.
"The stream flows by and time rolls by. Now daytime flies, so close those eyes. It's been a long day, little one, little one. Small birds now slumber in the nest and fishes in their stream. No night has come to send us rest and give to all a wondrous dream. All night hours go so soft and low. The lazy stream runs calm and slow. It's been a long day, little one, little one. Our weary world is waiting soon. Bright stars will pierce the sky, as silent as the golden moon that sheds her light on you and I, and when the darkness drifts away, some lark up high will sing and say, 'Oh, welcome to a newborn day, my little one.'"
Gonf crept up, carrying Chugger. The squirrel babe was fast asleep. Sliding him aboard the logboat with the dozy little shrews, Gonf patted his friend's shoulder.
"Wish we could take you all the way with us, Firmo mate. Old Chug went out like some beast had whacked him with a sling stone once you started singing. How'd you do it?"
Logalog Firmo shrugged, gesturing at the logboat.
"I've had plenty of practice, mate. 8 of them are mine."
It was about an hour after dawn when Trimp opened her eyes. The previous night had been a late one, with lots of good shrew food, singing, storytelling, and even a bout of tail wrestling by the two lithe young Guwassum shrews to impress her. Some shrew cooks were up and about, rekindling the fire and preparing breakfast. the Gwasim were very fond of sizable breakfasts when they were at summer camp. Feigning sleep, the hedgehog maid peeped out from under her blanket, savoring the day. Downstream looked like a long, winding green hall with alder, bird cherry, and weeping willow trees practically forming an arch over the sun-dappled stream, which was bordered by bright, flowering club rush, sedge, and tway blade. Blue and pearly gray, the fire smoke hovered, making gentle swirls between sunshine and shadow in diagonal shafts. Snatches of murmured conversation between early risers were muted in the background with the sweet odors of smoldering peat and glowing pine bark on the fire. Trimp wished that she could stay like this forever, happy amongst true friends in tranquil summer woodlands by a stream.
Oatmeal and honey, fresh fruit and hot mint tea, marm.
It was the two shrew cooks from the previous evening, tempting her to partake of breakfast. Trimp needed no coaxing. She sat up gratefully, wondering how one night's sleep could leave her with such a fine appetite.
Thank you, friends. My word, this looks delicious.
Gonf and the Logalog were in friendly dispute as they broke their fast.
Hearken to me, mousy thief. We're sailing with you, at least as far as the seashore, and that's final, mate.
No, no, Fermo, we wouldn't think of pulling you away from your summer camp. We'll be all right traveling on alone.
Ha! Will you listen to the mouse, turning down an offer of safe voyaging in convoy? He's mad, Martin. Tell him.
Wiping wild plum juice from his paws, the warrior agreed.
Safety in numbers, Gonf. I'm all for it.
Where's your manners, mate?
Do you want to offend Logalog Fermo by refusing his kind offer?
Ignore him, Fermo. I accept.
Denny and Chugger seconded the Red Wall champion.
And I accept, too, as well and all, Mr. Shrew.
I too, sir. Ye shrews be good company and good cookers. Aye.
Trimp licked her oatmeal spoon and held it up.
That goes for me, too, unless Gonf wants to do all the cooking and paddling aboard that raft.
The Prince of Mouse Thieves clapped the Gwasim leader's back.
Quit your arguing, matey. 'Tis no good what you say. You're going with us, like it or not, see? You're going.
A real shrewish voice rang out. Fermo's wife, Honeysuckle, bustled up, waving a ladle. She was bigger than him, and had a temper that none could match on land or water.
Goin'? Goin' where, may I ask?
Even though he was a chieftain, Fermo wilted under her fierce eye and sharp tone.
Just down the stream a piece, my fragrant wood rose.
Gonf interrupted, standing between both shrews.
Ah, Honeysuckle, you delightful morsel. We've asked your husband to accompany us with some of his shrews to show us the way and guard us against attack. But, of course, he says he can't possibly leave your side on such a foolish errand. Not that I blame Fermo. Any beast leaving a dark-eyed beauty like you to go off sailing, he'd be out of his mind, mad as a frog, and daft as a bluebottle.
Lips pursed grimly, Honeysuckle waggled the ladle under Fermo's nose and spoke threateningly.
And you great lazy lump, you said you wouldn't go, eh?
But, Peddle, how can I leave you and all the little uns?
Fermo winced. His wife had hoisted him upright by one ear.
In the boat, log a lazy paws this instant. You Gwasim there, what are you standing grinning about, eh? Now get those log boats ready to sail now, while I'm still in a good mood. Shift your moss-bound behinds.
Four log boats were lashed to the raft's sides, each with six Gwasim paddlers. Honeysuckle tossed supplies aboard with furious strength and energy. Gonf murmured under his breath as Denny dodged a sack of vegetables.
Matey, I'd hate to see her in a bad mood if this is one of her good moods.
Honeysuckle scowled at him.
What was that you said?
The clever mouse thief gestured at the provisions.
I was just saying, Marm, after so much bad food, 'tis nice to see some good food.
She pointed a warning paw at the pair.
Don't let me hear of you two wasting any.
Denny tugged his snout respectfully.
How could us'uns be a-wastin' vittles loaded aboard, boy, such a fur paw as yourn, boy Gert Booty?
Honeysuckle dipped the mole a deep curtsy, actually smiling.
Why, thank ye, Sir Mole. What a gallant thing to say.
Halfway downstream between the camp and the next bend, Log-a-Log sighed with relief and shook Denny warmly by the paw.
You clinched it, Din, all that fair paw and great beauty stuff. Where'd you learn it?
The mole twitched his nose at Trimp.
Brr, I didn't learn nothing, zur. I'm just a regular silver-tongued mole rogue. Bain't I, Miss Trimp?
The hedgehog maid twitched her nose back at him.
Aye, especially when it comes to lapping up oatmeal and honey, you are, great fat fraud.
Fermo did a perfect imitation of his wife's voice.
One more remark like that, young og, and I'll wrap your ears with my pudding spoon. That mole's a real gentle beast.
Meandering happily down the broad waterway through the sun and shade, the travelers and their shrew friends jested and chuckled with each other. A water meadow appeared on their left about midday. The Goo-Awesome had ceased paddling because the current was carrying them along with sufficient speed. All aboard both raft and logboats sat admiring the serene beauty as Log-a-Log pointed out its features.
Looks peaceful, don't it? But mark my words, mates, amidst all that brookweed, water lilies, crowfoot, and gypsy wart, there's more skeeters than you could shake a stick at. Mayfly, caddisfly, stonefly, alderfly, pond skaters, big lace wings, and of course the old emperor dragonflies. Makes it a rare old fishing spot. Fish all come there to hunt the flies.
Gonth winked craftily at the shrew.
Aye. And Goo-Awesome go there to hunt the fish, I'll wager.
A sturdy old shrew elder snorted at the mouse thief's remark.
You're joking, of course. There's eels and pike in there longer'n a logboat. 'Tis them to be hunting us if in shrews was fool enough to try fish in that water meadow.
Log-a-Log pointed downstream.
Look, there's dragonflies coming up this way. They ain't tarrying either. Wonder what's upset 'em.
A half dozen of the huge insects came straight at the raft, suddenly veering off into the water meadow, their iridescent wingbacks and black-green banded bodies making a brave sight. Log-a-Log addressed Martin.
Something's upset the dragons. We'd best be on our guard, especially when we round that bend ahead. There's a creek to one side of it. Stay on the alert, Goo-Awesome.
Trimp sat in the center of the raft, holding on to Chugger. Half the shrews took to paddling the logboats lashed to the raft sides. The rest joined Martin, Log-a-Log, Denny, and Gaunt, who stood forward on the raft, weapons close to paw. As they rounded the bend, it became only too clear what danger they were in. Like some fantastic snowstorm, a male swan came billowing out of the creek entrance. The sight of it took Trent's breath away. Spreading awesome wings, the colossal bird reared out of the water, its long neck bent, hissing loudly like a serpent. Log-a-Log roared at the paddlers.
Backwater! Backwater, Goo-Awesome!
Furiously, the shrews backpaddled against the current, but the raft's stern hit the bank on the bend's incurve and lodged there. The elder shrew seized a long paddle and bravely swung it at the swan, sizing up the situation for his companions as he did so.
He's a mute swan. Probably the female's guarding her young up that creek, and this feller thinks we're going to hurt him. Looks fairly mad to me. Ain't going to let us pass or retreat. This is his stretch of water, and he'll protect his family in this area with his life, mates.
Though they were in great danger, Martin could not help admiring the giant bird. With its tough, orange beak, which had a hard black lump at its base, and its neck thick as a rowan sapling, the mute male swan was a fiercely wondrous sight, snow-white, with wings powerful enough to cripple and kill an adversary. The warrior picked up a paddle to fend it off, knowing that he had not the heart to kill or injure such a magnificent creature with his sword. However, The swan had no such finer feelings, but came at them hissing and making a peculiarly strange squeak, far out of character given his bulk and ferocity. Gomp swung his paddle. A gigantic wing descended on him, snapping the paddle like a twig and buffeting him from the raft into the water. Martin's paddle clacked hard against the bird's beak, sending a jarring pain through his paws, and the swan came at him. Denny caught it a hefty blow in the neck, which merely seemed to bend gracefully under the impact. Two shrews were swept off into the water by another clout from the swan's wing. It reared high and gripped the raft timbers in its wide webbed claws, trying to hoist itself aboard. Trimp and Chugger slid backward, yelling, as the raft began tilting with the swan's weight pressing on its front end. Martin grabbed his sword and held it up quickly so that the swan's beak hit it with a loud echoing sound. Pang! No Beast was expecting what happened next. Something hit the swan's head like a stone, sending a cloud of small white feathers into the air. There was an ear-splitting screech from above. It was Krar, Woodwatcher. The courageous goshawk came in for another dive, even though it must have been dizzy from the first blow. The swan swung its beak and retaliated. There was a thudding noise as both birds struck one another simultaneously. Krar landed in a heap on the raft. Savagely shaking off Denny, who was trying to help it recover, the goshawk struggled upright, panting, "Use thy raft poles and get thee off downstream! Hasten now, while I hold off yonder battler." Krar launched himself into the attack once more. Feathers flew amid the hissing and screeching. Stream water was thrashed into foam, leaves and branches showered wide. Punting the raft out from the bank, while shrews either side paddled madly, they skimmed out under the arch formed by the swan's neck and Krar's wings, into the midstream current and off down the waterway. Still paddling and poling with great vigor, they turned their heads to see what the outcome would be. Krar Woodwatcher was as brave and hard a fighter as the swan, but not so foolish. The moment he saw every beast was out of danger, he zoomed off into the woodlands to nurse his bruises, leaving behind a bewildered and still angry mute swan. Trim could not stop herself from trembling as she called out, "He's coming after us! The swan's coming after us!" Logalog gritted his teeth.
"Don't look back, mates. It'll slow us down. Keep paddling fast as you can. The swan'll only follow us to the edge of his territory. Then he'll go back to guard his family."
The shrew's prediction proved true, though it gave them a hair-raising moment. The swan came after them in no uncertain fashion. It was almost upon the raft, hardly two logboat lengths from it, when suddenly it gave a final hiss and turned about, traversing back upstream lest any other intruder had shown up to menace its brood. With a sigh of relief, the friends collapsed to the deck, shaking all over from exertion and the shock of the swan's attack. The irrepressible Gonf grabbed the sailcloth, holding it wide and flapping his outstretched paws at Trimp.
"What's the matter, matey? Never seen a swan before?"
The hedgehog maid hooked a paw under the teaser and pulled him flat on his tail.
"Oh, I've seen a swan, all right, Gonf, though if I never see another one in my life, 'twill be too soon, thank you."
Through the thinning trees, Denny scanned the sky.
"Where be ye hawkbird gone?"
Martin indicated the changing terrain.
"We're coming out of the woodlands, Den, leaving Krar's territory too, I imagine. I wish I could have thanked him. What a great fight he put up on our behalf. I'll never forget that brave bird. Never."
9. Once they left the trees behind, there was very little shade. The water became deeper, the current more sluggish. Throughout a long, hot day, the travelers did their share, taking turns to relieve the Gewossam paddlers. Only little Chugger seemed unaffected by the blistering heat. With a damp, shrew headband bound around his brow and an ash twig in his paw, he cavorted and leaped everywhere, doing battle against a score of imaginary swans. No sooner had Shadows begun to lengthen than Logalog shipped his paddle, calling out the order they were all waiting upon.
"Pull into that curve on your right, mates. We'll rest there and camp until tomorrow."
Gratefully, Trimp watched their lumbering craft nose into the shallows of a cove. It had a good flat bank and protruding rock ledges to provide much-needed shade. Guwasum cooks immersed canteens of drinks in water, which was cool and shaded by the overhang. Some went out scouting for fresh food. Others began preparing a meal from their supplies. Eyeing their leader hopefully, the rest sat on the raft in silence, awaiting his command. Logalog Fermo wandered up and down the bank, peering into the crystal-clear water. He scratched his chin, as if undecided, then wagged a cautionary paw at his crew.
"No further in the end of that raft now. Stay out of the current and deep parts, and keep close to the bank. I don't want to carry back news of any drowned Guwasum to your kin."
Before he had finished speaking, several of the younger shrews hurled themselves, yelling, into the stream.
"Yahoo!"
Jumping ashore to avoid the splashes of the bathing party, Logalog shook his head at Martin.
"Look at 'em, like a flippin' shower of dibbins."
A secret wink passed between Gonf and Martin as the warrior shrugged free of his sword and belt. Grabbing Logalog between them, they leaped into the water. The shrew chieftain surfaced breathless, blowing spray from both nostrils.
"Ah, you rotten, horrible creatures! What'd you do that for?"
Gaunt flung himself on Logalog and ducked him.
"Get out, you old fogey! You were dying for a play in the water, weren't you?"
Logalog swam deftly out of the mouse thief's reach.
"Of course I was, mate. But don't tell my shrews that. I'm supposed to be a serious leader who acts responsibly."
He sank beneath the surface again as Chugger landed on him.
"You nor a leader, you a big fish. Chugger want to ride on you back. Come on, fishy, hop, hop, get a move on."
Every beast had tremendous fun in the stream, laughing and splashing, ducking and diving, and behaving exactly as Logalog had said, like a shower of dibbins. However, they deserted the water en masse when the foraging party returned, hailing from the bank top.
"Look it, mates! We found strawberries!"
Two haversacks filled with wild strawberries, small, sweet, and juicy, were carried into camp. Refreshed after her swim, Trimp sat with Chugger and Denny on the sun-warmed rocks, sharing a heap of the delicious fruit. One of their foraging party reported to Logalog,
"Saw a pile of otter tracks on the heathland back there, maybe 15 or more, all biggins."
The shrew chieftain shrugged, selecting a big strawberry.
"Otters are good beasts. We've no reason to fear 'em. They're welcome to a paw full of victuals if and they visit us."
As evening shades tinged the skies, the otters came upriver and emerged dripping from the stream. A big wiry fellow, obviously their skipper, held forth his paws in greeting.
"Peaceful evening to you, friends. Is that a fruit salad with strawberries in it, I see? Looks handsome, don't it?"
Logalog smiled at the hungry otters, indicating that they were free to help themselves.
"Sit down and welcome, friend. Haven't I seen you afore?"
Balancing back on his rudder-like tail, the otter answered,
"Probably crossed paths once or twice, matey. I'm Tungro. My tribe have a holt on the river north of here."
The shrew nodded.
"Ah, Tungro. Heard your name someplace. What are you and your crew doing hereabouts, mate?"
Tungro accepted food from Trimp and thanked her. He acted rather nonchalant, but Logalog suspected he was either hiding something or not telling the full story when he replied airily,
"Oh, not much, you know, just taking a look to see what's on the other side of the hill, so to speak. Ain't you or none of your crew caught sight of an old-looking raggedy otter around here today, have ye?"
Logalog threw a pebble into the stream, watching it sink.
"No, mate. Why'd you ask?"
Tungro did not reply. He nodded to his crew, finished eating, and bobbed his head courteously.
"Obliged to you for the victuals, friends.
Go in peace, and good fortune travel with you. Oh, if and you should bump into the old otter I mentioned, tell him that he can come back to the holt if and he's mended his ways.
Tungro handed Fermo an otter tail ring.
Give him this, and say that you're all mates of mine. Fare you well now.
Without creating a single splash, the otters slipped into the water and were gone. Martin and Gonf came to sit alongside Logalog, and the mouse thief expressed his bewilderment.
Phew! That was a speedy visit. What do you suppose 'twas all about, Fermo?
The shrew's answer was guarded.
You'll forgive me if and I don't tell all the story, because I ain't certain of the full facts meself, but here's as much as I'm willing to say, mates. I've heard of Tungro, aye, and his brother Fulgrim. Both great warriors, 'tis said, but Fulgrim was known to be fiercer, even though he was smaller than Tungro. Well, when their old father died, they was joint skippers of their holt. One winter they were attacked by a mixed band of vermin, but otters ain't beasts to mess with. They gave those vermin scum a real good drubbin' and drove 'em off. Now, Tungro reckoned that was enough, but not Fulgrim. Off he went alone in pursuit of the vermin. Wasn't until 2 seasons later Fulgrim returned home. They say the vermin laid a trap and captured him. Starved, beaten, tortured, something horrible he was. Wounded, crippled, and with only one good eye. Sick in the brain, too, 'cause Fulgrim was never the same after what those vermin did to him. I know from listening to travelers, Fulgrim behaved so bad and strange that Tungro's banished him more than once from the holt. But Fulgrim always returns, and Tungro forgives his ways and takes him back. Well, you couldn't banish your own brother forever, just 'cause he ain't right in the head, now could you?
Martin had to agree with the shrew.
No, you're right. Blood's thicker than water. What was that he gave you to give to his brother?
Logalog held up the beautiful otter tail ring carved from the backbone of some great fish.
Nice, ain't it? Though I hope we don't meet Fulgrim and have to give him it.
Gonf took the tail ring and inspected it.
Why not, Fermo? He's not as bad as all that, is he?
The shrew took the tail ring back and stowed it in his pouch.
I can't say, Gonf. I won't tell you all I've heard, 'cause I'm not sure I believe it. And I can't tell you what I haven't seen. I'm for a spot of shut-eye now. You two can sit up and natter all night.
Nothing farther was mentioned of Tungro's brother, Fulgrim. The friends lay down to rest that night with their own thoughts about the story they had heard. Purely out of insatiable curiosity, Gonf wished that he could meet the strange otter. Finally, the mouse thief slept, not knowing that he was to get his wish on the following day. Next morning was damp and humid, with the sky clouded over a dirty gray and drizzle falling continuously. Pushing on downstream, the craft sailed slowly along on the rain-flecked waters. Trimp and Chugger sat beneath the awning the shrews had set up from the single sail. The hogmaid watched the others, droplets spilling from their whiskers, soaked through, paws slipping on paddles, as they pushed doggedly on. As noon approached, there was no change, and the drizzle persisted. Guwasim paddlers looked pleadingly to their leader. Logalog wiped moisture from his eyes, seeking a suitable spot along the same bank they had camped on the previous day. Eventually he called,
"Head her in, mates. Looks like an old cave yonder."
A tent was rigged over the cave front, and the provisions were stacked under it to keep them dry. Every beast crowded under the canvas and in the small cave. Chugger was wearing a rough hooded cloak, which Trimp had fashioned from an empty apple sack. Evading the hedgehog maid, who looked after him like a mother duck, the little squirrel toddled off to explore the country. Trimp looked right and left. Where had the little imp gone? Poking her head from under the shelter, she spotted him. Chugger had climbed the rock ledges and was up on top of the bank. He wrinkled his nose and waved at Trimp.
"Don't worry about Chug. Just going to fight swans.
Waving his ash twig, he vanished from sight. Trimp took off in pursuit, scrambling up the wet stones. Martin had just lit a small fire when he heard Trimp calling urgently from above.
Help! Come quick, mates!
Grabbing his sword, Martin dashed out ahead of the shrews. Together, he, Gaunt, and Fermo took the ledges in a series of bounds, with Denny and the Goo-Awesome following swiftly behind. Trimp was crouched down, protecting Chugger. She pointed,
There, Martin! Oh, help him, please!
Two water rats were tormenting another creature. Martin peered through the curtain of misty drizzle. It was an otter, limping along, clad in a ragged cloak and bent almost double. Kicking him and striking him with whippy willow withes, the vermin spat at him, taunting,
Move yourself, you doddering old rag bag! We're going to tie rocks to your paws and sink you in the stream, nice and slow. Come on, you howling, addle-brained idiot.
Martin lifted his sword and took a pace forward. Logalog placed a paw on his shoulder.
Stop there, warrior. Don't interfere. That's Fulgrim, you see, fighting the enemy.
Gaunt nodded toward the two rats, who were still unaware of their presence.
He's fighting them, do you say? Huh. It looks the other way round to me, mate.
Logalog shook his head grimly, murmuring to his shrews.
Get Trimp and the little un back down to the cave. This ain't fit for 'em to see. Keep silent, Martin. Crouch down by me and watch. You too, Gonf.
One rat stuck out his footpaw and tripped the lame otter, who fell heavily. Both rats laid on savagely with their switches as he pleaded,
Please, sirs, don't drown me. I'm not but a poor wayfaring beast who's lost his way. Don't beat me. Ow! Ow!
This continued for a moment, until one of the rats got too close to the victim. Like a wolf, Fulgrim was upon him with lightning speed. He seized the rat in a death hug, sinking his teeth deep into the vermin's throat. Shocked beyond belief, the other rat stood trembling a moment. Then he dashed off, wailing in terror. Fulgrim lifted a blood-stained mouth from his prey's neck, calling,
Run, 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 Ratty! I'll track you down. Fulgrim will get you.
At a signal from Logalog, the travelers backed off unobserved and clambered down to their camp. Gaunt sat by the fire, sipping a beaker of hot mushroom soup. He stared into the flames and shuddered.
Ah! I never seen a creature killed like that afore.
Martin passed a beaker of soup to Logalog. So that's Fulgrim, brother of Tungro. Well, Fermo, do you believe what they say now? Logalog nodded.
Every word, mate. Every awful word.
A sound of some beast scrambling down the ledges alerted them. Next moment, Fulgrim limped in, still with a blood-smeared mouth. Chugger's eyes grew big and round at the sight of the fearsome beast. The otter winked his single eye at them and sat by the fire.
Ah, nice fire. Chills a beast to the bone, Drizzle does.
Swiftly, Denny filled a beaker from the soup pot.
Grrr, zur otter, drink ye some nice hot soup up.
Smiling, Fulgrim shook his head. Martin saw that his teeth were filed or broken into jagged points.
Not for me, Mole. I got food back up there.
Trimp approached, bearing a loaf and a hunk of cheese.
Then take these with you for tomorrow, sir.
She took a step backward at the sight of the otter's face. It was painted thickly with plant dyes and mud to cover the horrible wounds and scars etched into it. The single red-rimmed eye stared crazily at her.
No, thank ye, missy. I'll have more food by tomorrow when I track that other un down. You shrew, can you let me have dinder and flint? Beast needs a good cookin' fire in this country, and I ain't got the makin's.
Logalog gave Fulgrim a bag of soft, dried moss and two chunks of flintstone to make fire with.
Take 'em and welcome, friend. Your brother Tungro said that I should give you this tail ring, too. He says you're welcome back at the Holt if and you've mended your ways. We're friends of your brother's.
Fulgrim reached out and grabbed Trim's paw, pushed the tail ring over it with a swift movement, and released her.
Pretty bracelet for a pretty maid, eh? If and you see my brother, tell him that I said he's a good beast. The Holt's better off without me. It's far too late for me to mend my ways. Got to go now. Light a fire. Do a spot of cooking. Travel on. Catch the other rat. Light another fire. Do more cooking.
Baring his pointed teeth at the horrified friends, Fulgrim stood up and stumped out into the rain. Trimp covered her mouth with both paws, her normal good pallor taking on a greenish tinge. Logalog sat her down by the fire, placing a dry sack around her shoulders.
Do you feel sick, missy? You don't look none too chirpy.
Trimp took a deep breath before replying.
Didn't you hear? That otter is going to cook a rat and eat it. Oh, I can't believe it.
Gonf winked at the others as he patted Trimp's paw.
You didn't believe him, did you, Trimp? Ha ha! That's a good un, ain't it, Martin? Ain't it, Fermo? An otter eating a water rat.
They both laughed hollowly.
Aha! Shouldn't believe all you hear, Trimp. Aye, he was only joking, miss. Ha ha!
Martin's half-hearted laugh trailed off miserably. Further along the bank, in the shelter of another rock ledge, Fulgrim was kindling a fire and holding a one-sided conversation with the slain water rat.
Pity I never got your mate. He was fatter'n you are. Still, don't fuss. I'll lay him by the paws afore sunset tomorrow night. Fire's nice, ain't it? Chills a beast to the bone, this drizzle does. Nice fire. I likes a good fire.
10. They slept late next morning. The rain had ceased and sunlight was beaming from clear summer skies when Chugger roused himself and trundled out onto the bank. Steamy mist from the rain hung over the whole bank shore in a thick, low layer, waiting for the sun to evaporate it. The tiny squirrel raced through it, giggling as he tried to catch the elusive tendrils in his paws.
Hee-hee-hee! All bees covered in frog! Lots of frogs! Hee-hee!
Gonf and Trimp emerged from the cave yawning. Upon hearing Chugger's cries, Gonf became alert.
What frogs? Who's covered in frogs?
Trimp shoved the mouse thief playfully.
He means fog. Look out!
The mist parted, and Chugger bowled head over brush into them. Gonf swept him up, tickling the little fellow and swinging him about.
I'll give you frogs, you villain!
Soon the whole party was up and about. Fermo and his shrews lit a fire and began cooking breakfast. Dinny appeared out of the mist, toting a pail of water.
Don't be fur from me seashores now. Look at all e frog hereabouts, Martin.
Martin climbed halfway up one of the ledges and peered over the mist curtain.
Right, Den. We don't normally get heavy bank mist like this inland. Sea can't be too far off now.
Hush! Every beast be still. I can hear someone coming this way.
It was the otters, Tungro and his crew. As soon as Martin recognized their voices, he hailed them from the bank.
Morning, friends! Breakfast's almost ready. You're welcome to share it with us.
Tungro waded ashore, dripping from the stream.
Thank ye kindly, good beasts. We wouldn't say no to a bite of breakfast. The crew ain't eaten yet today.
Nudging Logalog Fermo, Gonf raised his eyebrows.
Better get more shrew bread on the hot stones. Here was I, thinking I was going to get a nice, big, peaceful breakfast. Now it'll be a small, noisy one with this lot as guests.
The rest of Tungro's crew came ashore in a huddle. They had Fulgrim with them,
a rope lead around his middle and both paws bound by a long hobble which had allowed him to swim. He winked his one good eye at Trimp.
"Good day to ye, missy. Hope I finds ye well."
The hedgehog maid shuddered, though she bobbed him a curtsy and managed a quick smile. "I'm well, thank you, sir." Tungro drew Martin and Fermo to one side. He seemed slightly embarrassed and hesitant.
I hopes you'll forgive me for bringing my brother Fulgrim to your camp for breakfast like this. He ain't a bad beast, really. 'Tis just that his mind's troubled."
Martin nodded understandingly and patted Tungro's shoulder.
"Don't worry, friend. We know a bit about Fulgrim and the bad times he's had. He dropped by here yesterday afternoon. There was no trouble. He behaved himself quite well."
Tungro looked relieved.
"We caught up with Fulgrim just after he'd tracked and slain a rat. He'd lit a fire. That was how we spotted him. Me and the crew had to jump on poor Fulgrim a bit, but we managed. Tied him up and buried the rat carcass afore he... well..."
Fermo poured a beaker of Penny Cloud cordial for the otter.
"'Tis all right. You don't have to explain. We know from the other rat Fulgrim managed to get his paws on, just over the bank top there. Come on now, get something to eat."
Fermo and his shrews had made a delicious breakfast. There was hot shrew bread, strawberries, and a batch of vegetable pasties, with a choice of cordial or hot mint tea to drink. Tungro sat slightly apart with his brother, trying to make him eat a little, but Fulgrim kept his mouth firmly shut, refusing the food in silence. Every beast tried to get on with their meal, but they kept taking secretive glances as Tungro encouraged his brother.
"Come on now, Ful. These are prime victuals, made by the best of Gooawesome cooks. Try some of this pasty, me old mate."
Fulgrim merely shook his head stubbornly. Tungro noticed the watchers and shrugged with embarrassment.
"Sorry. He won't eat nothing. Though there ain't a thing wrong with your food, friends. 'Tis the best I ever tasted."
Trimp was trying to hold on to Chugger, but he wriggled out of her grasp and went swiftly on all fours to Fulgrim. Smiling up into the otter's scarred face, Chugger grabbed a pasty and lectured him like a mother squirrel.
"Eat'ee all up now, or you don't grow big a strong like me. I eat 'em up if and you don't, silly old river dog."
End of side 2. To continue, change side selector switch and turn the cassette over.